Hello and welcome to our insulin resistance practitioner training, open office hours and case study call. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo and I'm excited to be here to really support you on this journey of this very, very important journey of helping people to overcome their blood sugar imbalances. And I've been the last few days just had a lot of reminders of just how important our work is. One was just this morning as I was interviewed for a podcast and we really started to touch in and go deep. And I realized how strong my feelings about this topic are and how important it is and how so many people are just falling through the cracks when they don't get the proper care. And you guys are being trained in a way that most endocrinologists have no clue. In fact, the decisions that endocrinologists are making are actually life-threatening in many cases. And I just really want you guys to get through this training, get your certification, do your case studies, and get out there and change the world, because it's heartbreaking, the kinds of things that are going on. It's going to get teary-eyed. And if you're willing, Michelle, I know you mentioned the other day that you'd be willing to share. I just wanted Michelle Gamble, who's a student in this program as well as the full-blown insulin nutritional endocrinology training, and I just want her to share a little bit about why this is so important and just a heartbreaking story that she has to share. So, Michelle, let me see. Is this an okay time for you to share?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. Go ahead, because you guys need to know how important this work is and how committed you need to be to it, because of the, I think, treacherous stuff that's happening in the medical world when it comes to blood sugar balance. So go ahead, Michelle.
We just had the final hearing in what's called a dependency case. For those of you who may remember, in December, the Department of Family and Children's Services took my daughter from me. My daughter, for those of you who don't know, she is a special needs child. She's going to turn 18 in a month, actually. However, she is moderately mentally retarded. She's also diabetic. Indeed, when I first adopted her, they had her diagnosed as type 1 diabetes. However, because of my training, I recognized that this diagnosis didn't really set well. And when I spoke with the doctors prior to the adoption, when I was just her foster parent, I asked them, well, how do you know if she's type 1 or type 2? Are there any kind of tests that you have to do? And he just looked at me and said, well, I know it's type 1. You know, trust me, it's type 1. And I said to him, well, you know, we've been working with her diet and lifestyle, and she's really been responding to the point where she doesn't even need the insulin. And he assured me that that was just a matter of the pancreas giving its last hurrah, and then it was just going to peter out and totally conk out, and after that, she was going to definitely need insulin. At no point did he opt to do any kind of testing on her. And subsequently, when I adopted her, one of the first things I did was I asked her primary care provider about that diagnosis. And at the time, she said, well, you know, that's not in my scope of practice. I'm going to refer you out to an endocrinologist, and that person can do the specific testing. Well, we got referred out to the endocrinologist. The endocrinologist did the testing and found out that my daughter is actually type 2 diabetic. Subsequently, she decided she wanted to put my daughter on insulin. And I said, look, we've been doing all of this stuff. Her A1C is below 7.0, which is like the gold standard for diabetics. You know, it's not our gold standard, but it's good enough for them. So, hey. And I said, I don't agree with putting her on insulin. At that point, I stopped going to the endocrinologist. I kept going to her primary care provider, where we kept on following up with her A1C. And when we followed up with her A1C, each time her A1C was below 7.0. So it was like 6.3, 6.5, 6.6. And so when they took her from me in December, they took her from me saying that there was medical neglect because she had lost weight. She was previously overweight. She's only 5 feet tall. She was overweight to the point where she was about 170 pounds, which is obese. and very much a risk factor, as you guys know. And so they said, well, she's lost that weight, you know, and she lost it too rapidly, and that's a danger. Now, keep in mind, my daughter had stayed at about 100 pounds for almost a year, just leveled off and maintained that weight for a year. They claimed that this weight was contrary to being healthy. In fact, she was close to being anorexic. And just a moment. Hello? Close to being anorexic. Subsequently, they said that I was endangering her health. The quote-unquote medical director never saw her, never did an exam on her, just simply saw a picture where they showed where she had skin folds from losing the weight. As you guys know, if anyone has ever lost a significant amount of weight, you get skin folds. That's why they have plastic surgery for a lot of these people. Even when I submitted to them the CDC calculator that showed that her BMI was 19, they said, oh, she's just 1 point away from being anorexic. And the judge finally ruled yesterday that I was medically negligent because I did not take her back to the endocrinologist, and because she was failure to thrive, and I had threatened her life, and I had starved her. So all of this really impresses upon me the importance of educating our community, because at no point did the endocrinologist ever do a test on her insulin. I subsequently did a fasting insulin test on her based on the teachings of Dr. Rita Marie, and I was able to get her primary care provider to do the testing, and her fasting insulin was actually high, you know, and yet this doctor wanted to put her on even more insulin, because that's the only thing that they know. And even from my training, I've done additional training as a diabetes educator, and even in that training, because I go out to senior citizen centers, and they give me a worksheet to share with the seniors that talks about how different medications work. And they talk about how some medications work on improving the insulin sensitivity. Some medication is insulin. Other medications work on eliminating the sugar through the urine. And this doctor, she knows even less than the senior citizens that I teach, you know, which is, it's horrific that they are so in the dark about what's going on. And as in this case, what they have done has now threatened the health and well-being of my daughter, because since December, they have put her on over 10 different medications. She has gained over 70 pounds. They had her hospitalized for about 2 months. And during that time, she was experiencing diarrhea and throwing up. Her feet swelled up to the point where she was bedridden and they had to have her feet elevated. And even in the records at the hospital, they say that it was a consequence of the medication that they were giving her. She has now become once again symptomatic of her schizophrenia. So they have her on countless antipsychotropics. And the story just continues, ladies and gents.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing. I know it's a real sensitive story for you and very emotional. But it just fuels my fury and fire to get this out there. And the more that we can educate people, the lay public, about what is really going on, the more they can go to their doctors. And as many of my clients do, fire their doctors, because they know more than their doctors and they're not going to stand for it. And that's what we got to get people to be doing, is not stand for this abusive care. How can they take a child, 17 years old, who is 100 pounds with, you know, close to normal, out of the diabetic range anyway, A1Cs, and on no medication and thriving, and now she's horrifically challenged 6 months later? Look what they could do in 6 months. They've destroyed this girl's health. And it irritates me that that's considered the standard of care. And we have to go out there and we just have to educate people, because people are being educated by these, I won't use the word, what I want to say about these people, because it's horrific. That's what the public knows. And when we explain it to them, they're like, whoa, I had no idea. Whoa, I had no idea. So get out there and start doing community education talks. I don't care if you're just starting the program, if you're halfway through, you know enough, you know more than the endocrinologists do, to be able to get out there and do some community education and get this word out that this stuff, this is preventable, this does not have to happen.
And so, Dr. Rita Marie, I want to thank you for you guys. Dr. Rita Marie actually phoned in and testified, and it was fascinating because it's just so hard for them to comprehend. And the lawyers kept on attacking her in terms of, you can't do anything with type 2 diabetes. You can't address it with diet and exercise and lifestyle. I mean, it's as if they could not believe that you could actually do something natural as opposed to pumping tons of insulin into someone.
When they asked me the question about that, though, about the insulin, they said, well, can a type 2 diabetic ever get off insulin? I said, a type 2 diabetic should never be on insulin. The only time a type 2 diabetic should be on insulin is if they've, you know, they've just gone, you know, multiple decades on without it, and then they've burned out, you know, uncontrolled, and they've burned out their pancreas. She's 17. Crazy. It's insane. And her fasting insulin was something like 12 or something. You don't put someone on insulin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just aggravates me. So it just makes me more furious. And so when I was interviewed on this, it was very timely that I got interviewed on this podcast, a diabetes podcast today, that I was just like, and beforehand he said to me, is there anything you want like to really like, that like started off and why you're so passionate about this? And I told him your story, Michelle. And he said, oh my God, we have to share that. So, you know, in a very short, vague, you know, I didn't name you or anything, told the story about, and he and I both concurred on how ridiculous the kind of care is out there and how much people need to be empowered to take charge of their own health. So thank you for, you know, being open with this. But I think you telling this story is a really good indicator. How could anybody look? Okay, look, 100 pounds, good, decent A1Cs, off the psychotropics, off all medication, and thriving. 6 months later, under the care of Western medicine, 6 months later, in this horrific state.
And with all of that insulin, her A1C is 9.
9? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And the system has failed her from the very beginning, because at the very beginning, the first endocrinologist just gave her this slap diagnosis of type 1 diabetes without any testing. No testing.
How can an endocrinologist not know how to diagnose type 1 diabetes?
He said it wasn't necessary to do the testing. He said he looked at the symptomology and he could see from the symptomology that she was a type 1 diabetic, and he refused to do any testing.
Because she was 17, right? She's a child. She's got type 1. She's an adult. She has type 2. That's like kindergarten diagnosis.
Yeah. I mean, she was 14 at that time.
Yeah.
And he put a diagnosis of type 1 diabetes on her and refused to listen to anything that I said. And then the second endocrinologist, well, at the very least, she did the testing that I recommended and found out that she was actually type 2 diabetes. But then her next step was, oh, let's put her on insulin. Never bothered to check her fasting insulin to see what was the functionality of her pancreas. Just made the slap diagnosis of, oh, let's put her on insulin.
Crazy. And no one did see peptide, which you guys learned to do. It's a commonly overlooked test that we do for the pancreatic function. So thank you for sharing, Michelle. My heart goes out to you big time in this tough situation. And my wish is that, you know, you're able to use this to help others. Oops, is she gone? So, any comments any comments at all? Raise your hand. Start to do any comments or questions. Let's go for it. And anybody has anything they want to share about what Michelle just shared, I would love to hear it.
Okay, go ahead.
I closed your line, Michelle. I'll open it up again if you raise your hand, star two. It sounds like you got a call. Anybody, questions or comments? Star two raises your hand, Lynn. And then, you know, there's the Q&A in the slot, in the chat. I'll look at the chat. Yeah, Lynn, I opened you.
Oh, okay, sorry. I just wanted to comment on continued support for Michelle. I know there are groups out there, because I've been a part of them, about how our legal and medical system basically medically kidnap our children. And like you've been saying, we need to continue. It's hard to have compassion, it's understanding the fear that underlines all of this. It's fear because people don't know. They're trusting what they're being taught, and we're not teaching a seeking, curious mind to do the detective work like you teach us. And but that also shows up in our legal system as well, where it's that rigid characterology that comes in and says this is the only way that things can happen. And again, that just shows the fear that underlines it, that and again, people are afraid if they do anything they might lose their job, and then what are they going to do for money? And so we just have to continue to get out there and teach and support this, but continue to educate yourself, become a part of these groups where parents need this knowledge that we have, where their children have basically been kidnapped by the medical establishment. But we just have to learn for ourselves not to be afraid, to be grounded and stand up and say no more.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway. I agree. And the other thing is that I think that there's fear from the medical, the endocrinologist and all, that if what they say is right, everything I learned in medical school is wrong.
Exactly.
And they're scared.
Yeah. Which might mean they'd have to change, which might mean they won't be working there anymore. And they'll lose a job, they'll lose an income. So, yeah.
And they're not seeing the potential that they can shift, because more and more people are demanding functional medicine approaches and dietary approaches, and that it really is just a matter of educating. I mean, we have multiple medical doctors here in our program who have decided that, and decided that this was the place to be to learn it, because we went, into so much depth and we have such a broad scope. But the education is big time. It really is. And it's necessary. And in medical school, it's really sad to say, this is something my son said to his eighth grade principal. He said, you guys are teaching this all wrong. You're teaching us what to think, not how to think. And I believe that that's the big problem in medical school.
Mm-hmm.
They're teaching them what to think. They're feeding them protocols. They're feeding them stuff and not teaching them to really go deep and go, oh, I understand how the biochemistry works. Therefore, I understand what the mechanism of this is, and I can understand what the root cause is, so I can help reverse it. And let's first do no harm, as Hippocrates says.
Yeah.
This is what they forget. Let's first do no harm. So let's look to nature and then look to drugs when nature doesn't have a cure, if it's immediately life-threatening or whatever. But drugs are an artificial intervention that doesn't solve the problem. So,
and like Justin said, it's not just children, it's the elderly too. I know Susan has her experience with it. Just right before we got on the call, there was somebody who goes to our conferences. Her elderly mother had gone in for some knee surgery, and she's been dealing with them. And most recently, her mother had been abdominal pains, dizzy, throwing up, low-grade fever, all that. And she brought her to the doctor, and they said, well, that's just old age. And so, yeah, exactly. And so she had brought her to a gastroenterologist who wants to put her on an antacid. And so I said, you realize it could really be low stomach acid? And she said, yeah, I told the doctor that. And he looked at me like, very funny. And so she said, what tests can he run? And I said, well, he'll probably only run a CBC or maybe a metabolic panel. And so you look at your chloride levels, your protein, your globulin, your phosphorus, your bun, all these things. And She's like, wow, he didn't, he never even really looked at those. So it just,
It's sad. I mean, we teach in our, just our intro to the blood chemistry course way more than that. And then our advanced one is like way over the top better. Wow.
Anyway.
It's sad, so, but it's the way it is. Thank you, Lynn. I'm going to move on to Maria.
Yep.
Let me open her.
Hello.
You're open. Hi, Maria. We can hear you.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, I haven't been to one of these calls, but maybe there was a reason to come to this call. I really feel for Michelle, and I can just imagine, obviously, what she has gone through. But I also think that we have to be careful, because there is a part of me, as I was listening, there was some kind of a really upset and rage almost. And it is potentially our tendency of us who are passionate about the topic to go on and bust people's balls. And I don't think we can do that. I don't think it's to our advantage. I think that, you know, and from the lawyers talking to you, the way they were talking, to the doctors and to a whole system, this is much bigger. It's from liability, from the government putting the laws and regulations, the costs involved, and obviously archaic medical education. And that's improving, but it's going to take a long time. And there is a whole set of ordeal that I think it is to our advantage to, like you said, you know, educate, but we also have to control our emotions, I think, when we talk to people about this topic. Otherwise, they will turn against the information that is extremely valuable, because it becomes the world against that person or that family. Mm-hmm. It's not from the lawyers, from the government, from the doctors, and from that versus the parent, in case of Michelle, who is educated or trying. And Michelle is highly educated on this, but imagine a mom who is not. This is not that simple. It's not that simple. And I think that every time that we speak about it, I mean, examples of the story of Michelle are very valuable. That can touch a mom, or, well, parents, not mom only. But I think we have to be really careful how we put the words out there. Or we're going to actually distance ourselves from helping others, because mm-hmm. it's a whole system against, you know, what we're trying to do. So anyway, I just want to say this, because my thing is just, I felt like, oh, my God, what the hell, you know, what is going on? But it's big. So anyway, I just want to share that.
Thank you.
So
thank you. I hear you on that, because we can get raged, and I can rage at my own home. I was raging for hours after I got off that phone call, because all they were trying to do was frustrate me and, you know, put down. And even when Michelle gave like stacks and stacks of medical journal, peer-reviewed medical journal articles about this, they wouldn't look at it. They didn't want to look at it. So, but we need to always arm ourselves with facts. That's why I include a lot of medical references in the program. And that you just say, you know, you speak that way. But I think the education is super important. Kind of like what I do with Sweet Spot. Before I offer it, I offer a bunch of education. And it wakes people up off their dust. Right. The people that even that don't join are looking, you know, to do something different. They want to do something different. So I think we just have to wake them up. Wake them up, wake them up, wake them up. So, and that's where the community education, you're welcome to use my program and modify it to your own needs. But get out there and start talking to people about it, because it's super important. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
And Michelle.
Well, in regards to what was said, you know, for 6 months, I was quiet. I didn't say anything. I was trying to go the route of the system, to do what the system said I needed to do. You know, we submitted various peer review journals, CDC reports, information from the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, all of her data points, all of her labs, everything. And in the end, none of it mattered. The judge did not look at a single thing. After we did, we had testimonies for the entire day from 9 o'clock to 4:30. And as soon as the last closing argument was rendered, the judge turned around and said, "This is my ruling." He did not even take 5 minutes to go into chambers to consider anything. And so, you know, the reality is that there are certain people out there that are not receptive to this information, regardless of how sweet you are, how soft-spoken you are, how professional you are, nothing. In fact, they tried to label me as a person with personality disorder because I had the audacity to challenge and to question the medical professionals. And so they started to attack me and started to say that it was pseudoscience and that I was a witch doctor. And this is after I presented the information from National Institute of Health, CDC, all of these accreditable agencies. I was the one that they blasted as having pseudoscience.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. It's sad. And it's got to change. And we need to be part of changing it, all of us, by educating. So if I go out there and try to educate alone, I can reach a certain number of people. But if I can educate hundreds and hopefully thousands and tens of thousands of practitioners to go out there and educate, it's exponential, right? And we need to educate people. There's so many people who are just blown away. I mean, my sister joined our sweet spot program because she finally got it that she needed to do something different. My brother-in-law, I'd given him the link to the page a few months ago, and he said, "You wrote me yesterday. I finally read that page." And he goes, "Unfortunately, it sounds just like me. Can I sign up?" Right? So if we keep chatting with people, we keep the conversations going, and we do this community education, then we're going to reach a lot more people. A lot more people, because there's so many people out there that you can help. And the point is to help educate them that you want to change this before it becomes diabetes, because there's damage done once it's become diabetes from those high levels of insulin and glucose for so many years. So you want to educate them to catch it early. So thank you again for sharing, Michelle.
And, you know, everything we do is in the spirit of love.
Yes.
And, you know, as long as you can say that you're doing it in the spirit of love, then that's what matters. Unfortunately, sometimes the loving thing is not what people want to hear sometimes, and sometimes it hurts to hear certain things. But we have to have the courage to move forward in that truth and to share our story so that at some point, like you said, with your family, maybe after hearing it over and over and from 50 million different people, maybe at some point it'll penetrate.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's so true, right? Over and over, repetition. I mean, educational studies, we all know that. It takes seven hits sometimes to really get something, you know, over and over and over again. And that's the way you do it. Don't just say, "I said it once and they didn't get it." No, over and over in different ways, different forums, get on Facebook, start Facebook Lives. Just start a lot of different ways to get your message out. And again, I love that, Michelle. Start with, come from a place of love. Yeah, and anger can come from a place of love and gentle kicks in the butt. Like we had a conversation on one of the calls the other day, and one of the practitioners was feeling badly because she called her. She said, "Look, I'm not going to see you. I'll give you a refund of whatever we haven't used, because if you don't come, if you won't get off the gluten, which I know is affecting you, and you don't stay off of it for 3 days, I can't help you." And she felt bad after that, and the person came back and had done it. And then she had also done something else and gotten her blood, a whole bunch of other stuff that she had been delaying. She said she needed that. She needed to be held to it. And that's what sometimes we have to do. And really sometimes it's getting to the heart of why are they not making the changes that you're asking them to make. So thank you. Looks like we have another hand from Denver, Colorado. I don't know who that is. It could be any number of people we have in that area. Hi, Denver.
Hi, Dr. Maria. It's Cynthia Ferris.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hi there. I just kudos to Michelle and everyone that rallied to support her and equip her. And I feel like you took one for the team, Michelle. And I totally agree with everything you say. And when we step, when I step back and engage my higher self, your comment about we're all coming from a place of love is that those bozo decision makers also in their hearts, they think they're coming from that place too. That same place of love. They may not see it as love, but they think they're doing the best. And I don't know if you guys engage in the functional forum at all, but I was so encouraged on the June 6th forum, and I can post that link. Dr. Terry Walls spoke, and she spoke about her journey. And I believe she said in 2009, I think, the National MS Society kind of didn't slander her, but they just said she was wacko, right?
Yeah.
And now 6 or 7 years later, they have a $1.5 million study that they're sponsoring with her. And her point, one of her points in sharing that with the audience, because she got the Linus Pauling Award, I believe, is what she earned or was recognized for. She said that was, you know, really monumental change in a very short period of time.
Awesome.
So I just have to hold on to that, and, you know, that's just what helps me keep plugging away, especially coming from a conventional medical family who I'm gearing up to talk to at a wedding in July about what I'm doing and trying to keep my party hat on and relaxed and not raise my cortisol and blood pressure in the process. But I just wanted to share those things. I hope that can be some help.
Thank you very much for sharing that. That is very encouraging, right? And I was telling Michelle the other day when I was speaking to her is that some of the best functional medicine doctors or people out there, change makers, are being brought to court against it. Jonathan Wright had his office raided. He's one of the forefathers of functional medicine before it was even called functional medicine. He had his office raided, even in spite of the fact that all these patients were saying, I never got help from anywhere else. He's the only one that could help me. Brzezinski, who's from Houston, who was doing this novel cancer treatment and was getting people well and had tons of support and people saying they were taking him to court saying he was practicing poor science and they should put people back on chemo so they could die, I guess. But anyway, so this happens, and so many good functional medicine practitioners and alternative therapists and naturopaths have had that flack. And, you know, we can go one way or the other. We can be quietly, you know, we can be out there crusading and lambasting, and it's kind of like what Maria was warning against, lambasting medicine, and then you get in the spotlight. And if we just quietly do what we're doing and educate our communities and educate our Facebook groups in a place from a place of love and education facts, then I think we're going to go a lot further. I know my son always says to me, Mom, just don't talk too much. I don't want to get you killed.
True.
I'm like, okay. I said, I'm small. I'm small fry. There's a lot of people out there that are much bigger and more outspoken than me. But the truth of the matter is, pharmaceuticals want us shut down. The standard medical doctors who don't think for themselves want us shut down. And we just have to be quietly getting up there. And I love what you shared about Terry. Thank you. I'm going to go watch that. Yeah, send me a link. Thank you. All right. So any other questions, comments, anything about Michelle before we move on to just general questions? Anybody else have anything to share? What does it bring up for you? What kind of emotion? Okay, I don't see any questions come up. Yeah. I don't see any other questions typed in. Let's see. No. Okay, so who's got questions? Is this who's got comments? Who wants to share a case of their own? Questions about the content, the curriculum, implementation, your own people? Anybody? Star 2. I saw Michelle's hand go up and then went down again. So, but star 2 will raise your hand. There we go. All right, Michelle.
When you were testifying, they asked you about food allergies. And, of course, they cut you off before you could really explain. But I needed some more clarification on that, on exactly how do food sensitivities and allergies affect blood glucose.
So there's a number of ways. And what I was trying to explain to them, and I was like caught, like trying to get this down to lay people's terms so they'd understand. And I started talking about molecular mimicry. And so there's cross-reactivity with tissue. We know that. And we know that in particular, the pancreas is especially sensitive to the dairy proteins. There's tons of studies out there on that. Gluten is affecting it as well. So there's that cross-reactivity where we do get an immune response against the tissue. So that would affect it, and that's more likely to impact it in becoming either manifesting if they have the genes for type 1 diabetes or like LADA, you know, latent adult autoimmune diabetes of adulthood. And then it's inflammatory, right? The whole immune system's on fire, so we inflame, and we inflame the insulin receptors, similar to the way the insulin receptors are damaged by, you know, various and sundry chemicals and hydrogenated fats and, you know, poor fat balance in the membranes. They are impacted by inflammation, and so inflamed receptors don't get a very good chance at working properly.
Does milk have the same kind of mimicry with the pancreas?
Milk is the one that has the most mimicry. Milk, that's what's been, you just go look it up, dairy and pancreatic attack or something. I remember what I used exactly, and I did a Medline search. Yeah. Yeah, definitely big. Like thyroid has more of an affinity to gluten, but it doesn't mean that the others don't. I mean, what I was trying to explain to them that I stopped and is that the way the immune system works and the way antibody production works is it's looking at this long, you know, a protein is a long string, right? But you see, it really just looks at the beginning or end three amino acids in sequence. And if it recognizes that three amino acid sequence, it attacks. So if you've got this long string that's, you know, casein or whey or some other protein from milk, and the three at either end match some part of the pancreas, then the immune system that's created this antibody against those three amino acids is going to attack the pancreas. And that's what they call molecular mimicry or cross-reactivity.
And then with the sensitivities, it's like once the immune system is activated, even if you turn down the fire a bit, it has more of a susceptibility to be reactivated, because we had done one food sensitivity panel with her after we had done a gluten-free diet for some time. And so when we did that particular panel, it came up, oh, you're not reacting to gluten. Mm-hmm. And so the lawyers were like, oh, see, there it says you're not reacting to gluten. And why did you take out gluten? But I said, well, the subsequent one that was done about 4 months after they took her, and of course all she was eating was gluten then, it showed that once again she was being reactive to the wheat.
That's
so
right.
It's like once you have it, there's no turning back. It's not like you can switch it off and it never come back again.
No, you just have to stay away. Yeah, well, especially with gluten because there's specific genes. So she has the genetics towards it. Somebody that has the genetics, forget about whether they have antibodies. I don't care. Get them off of it. Because it's going to happen. You're going to cross that bridge at some point where you do have reactivity. So if they have the genetics. I mean, one doctor I was listening to, I think it was Peter Osborne, he was saying that he doesn't trust any of the allergy testing for it. He'll instead just do the genetics. And if the person has the genetics, they're off gluten.
Which genetic gene would we look for?
Well, there's the DQ8. And the DQ2, I think, are two of the ones that are the most reactive. But there's others, CTLA, which affects like the autoimmune response on the thyroid. And I think there are a couple of others.
Is that in the 23andMe report?
Well, yeah, you get them in 23andMe, for sure. Yeah, and if you don't want to do the whole 23andMe, you can do them on like something like Entero Lab, or there's a number of people that do it, but it's more expensive to do that. You just might as well get the whole 23andMe. Yeah. And so, you know, here's my take on food allergy testing. And when you, you know, do that module in the mastery program, you'll see, is that it's like this point in time, right? So if the person has a leaky gut and you catch them a week after they ate nothing but spinach, you're probably going to see spinach show up. And if they don't eat spinach for a while and that dies down, and then you catch them a few months later and they did a week of binge eating on quinoa, you could see quinoa show up, right? Because it's when you just remove the foods, you're not healing the problem. The root cause is the leaky gut, right? It's not that the person was born with the antibodies. They're never born with the antibodies. Well, some of them can be crossed through the placenta and get into them from mama. But for the most part, those allergies are developed, and it's developed as a result of the leaky gut. And yes, some people have more of a tendency to specific ones based on genetics. So you've got to heal the leaky gut. That's the biggest part of it. And yeah, you've got to take them off the foods that if you do a test, you show up very sensitive. You want to take them off of those because otherwise you keep assaulting the system. But the truth is, if you don't address the leaky gut, it's not going to get fixed. And that's where I saw a lot of problems with colleagues as I was first, you know, getting into this and doing this. And they'd run these panels and they'd take people off 26 foods and then they'd come back and then they'd see that those 26 foods were okay. And then there was another 26 foods, right? So you, at any time there's more than four or five that show up, it's likely a leaky gut. If it's four, three, four, five, it might not be. It might be some other reasons or something they are born with. My husband has this soy allergy that no matter what, he started when he was a little kid and they started putting soy in hamburgers at fast food restaurants. He ended up in the hospital a few times. He has a very strong reaction to soy that he was born with because it wasn't like he was fed it his whole life. It was just that one food. So that's different than having a preponderance of food. And you try to put somebody on an elimination diet, eliminating 26 foods, it's really hard. And then you have lack of compliance. Got to heal the leaky gut.
Is the medical community receptive to that kind of information about intestinal permeability?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that the other day. I had to stop myself from saying leaky gut and call it increased intestinal permeability. I think they're more and more getting educated about it, but for the most part, your average GP on the corner who's just happy and wants to retire in 10 years and doesn't want to rock the boat is fine with just keeping people alive rather than getting them better. Probably not, you know, and I periodically have discussions with a couple of my husband's friends are medical doctors and they're more alternative in their thinking, you know, life-wise and they're outdoorsy and they're all this, but, they, you know, I just don't bring up certain topics with them because I started to discuss how, you know, all these people were healing Hashimoto's. He's like, you can't heal Hashimoto's. It's an autoimmune disease. It doesn't get better. I said, well, you know, okay. So the people I've been working with no longer have any signs of Hashimoto's when their antibodies were in the 600s before. And now they're down to 0 or 1 or 2 or 3. So, and they're clearly better. Their life is better. You know, he just went on, you know, and I was like, okay, don't bring up that subject anymore. So I'd like to say they are, but I think there's a long way to go before the average one is there. And it's really interesting. I think about this a lot. I think, what does it take? Like, why do some of them go, this is ridiculous. I need to learn that. I need to learn functional. I need to learn nutrition. Then the others just keep going. Like, I love to understand that brain wiring. Or that trigger, that how do you get into their brains and help them to see that there's a better way?
I'm reading a really good book that's related to that, Dr. Rita Marie.
Yeah?
What's it called? Mindset, the New Psychology of Success. And it talks about two different mindsets. There's one that is the fixed mindset, and then there's the growth mindset. And
that's
people
right.
who are the fixed mindset, they believe that, you know, you're smart, and that's just the way it is, that you don't have to study, you don't have to continue learning, you know, either you know it or you don't. And then there's the growth mindset, like we are, where we say that we're lifelong learners and we're always expanding and trying to become better. And depending on what mindset you are, that will determine if you're receptive to things like this.
Yes. Yes. I read that book and I listened to that book and I loved it. I forgot about that. Yes. And I think she also had some activities that could help the growth, the fixed mindset move into being more growth mindset oriented, but they have to want to, and they generally don't when they're fixed, right? Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's it. But what I really want to, it's like, how do I change it? Like, how do I have that little key that helps these people to see this fixed mindset is not working? It's not helping them in life.
We'd be millionaires if you had it, Dr. Renee.
I know. Maybe there's a pill. The magic supplement. The magic bullet. Let's put our cohorts in pharmacology onto that one. Thank you. Okay, Maria.
Okay, I just had to say this real quick to Michelle. First of all, that's a great book.
Yeah.
But it goes to say, you know, we are adults today and we're a product of our parents' education and habits and all that. So it's all about educating the adults so they can bring a healthy environment to the kids. As we get older, it's harder and harder. It is our responsibility as adults to go far and beyond to work on ourselves and recognize what's potentially room for improvement. But it is the parents. So, you know, I cannot... It's hard to see what these parents are doing to their freaking kids, and we are dealing with ourselves, you know, and I deal a lot with that on myself, and we're actually helping our clients, and it goes down to what? Help them to reverse the hell happened to them as a kid and help them to see that they have so much more potential from their, you know, the way they eat, the way they sleep, whatever it is, the drugs, alcohol, whatever the hell is it. And it's just, you know, if we can, you know, this lifestyle thing that we talk about it is to get to the parents so they can actually influence their kids, so to get to their heart through their kids.
Yes.
They care about the kids. They just are not fully aware what they're doing to them.
Right.
The way that we are aware, because we've been studying this and we know how much, you know, we are impacted by this, especially if we go and train with Laura and all these things, you know, that we've been doing with energy healing and things like that, that we see this. Anyway, I feel very passionate about this because I see this in kind of, it's educating the adults, the kids for kids, and we are grown-up kids. That's who we are. Now we have the power to change that and to help others to understand, look, I am this way, I've been this way, or I actually was able to correct myself because I was willing to go deep into this, and I'm a better person because of this. I'm able to help others because of this.
Yes.
Anyway, I will stop right here, but...
Thank you. Yeah, and the mindset is so important, though. And, you know, it's interesting because at the end of this podcast interview I had today, he said, so I want, like, if there was one thing that somebody, you're in this group of, you know, people, and they come to you and say, I just want, or no, this one person who's diabetic and just turned diabetic, and somebody said to come to you, what, and you get to give them the one first step to start with. And I thought about it, and I said, you know, you're going to laugh at this because it's not related to what you're going to think. I said, the first thing I would do is sit down with them and ask them what their dreams are and what they really want and what's their vision and what's most important to them in their life and what's the reason they want to overcome this disease. Like, really get them, like, in vivid color with what's important to them. I said, because if we just try to slap on a new habit onto an old paradigm of thinking, it ain't going to work and not going to work for more than a couple of weeks, and then they slip back.
Yeah. And, you know, I just started working with somebody who I didn't feel like the first session went well. I was really like, this is, there's something off here. It's just, you know, my intuition was right on it. Anyway, she goes on, you know, and I'm asking, you know, this is a four kind of session thing is all in, right? And she knew that. We spoke about it. And she's got, disorder issues. She was very private on saying certain things, and finally she opened up and this and that, and eating disorder issues. She's pre-diabetic, and food is really a nightmare. You know, it's all those things that we know. You know, I have an addictive behavior too, so I understand it very well. So, and then she says, well, can you talk? And I couldn't at the moment on Monday. And she's like, I think I have to cancel my session. I said, that's not a surprise I was thinking. And she goes on from like, I'm thinking to 5 minutes later, boom, boom, canceling the next session, right? And I said, okay. It's like, I cancel and I would like to discuss, you know, when you have a minute. So I talked to her next day on Tuesday. And I'm listening, you know, to her, and absolutely, you know, the type of person who has gone through a lot of, help, you know, from therapy to all this, is in very fixed mindset, extremely, like, I mean, like, it's amazing, right? And she used to see a nutritionist, and she even said that she thought that the reason it wasn't working maybe is because she wasn't seeing the person as much. There's not much accountability. And here I am. The moment that before she had the first session, I'm on it. Giving this, giving that, yada, yada. And then she backs off. People are not willing to do the work, you know, and I sensed that in the first session. And I listened and I said, look, there is no way I can know who you are and know how I drive this ship as a coach if I cannot get answers for certain questions. I need to understand what your true goals are. But when you don't respond, when you don't, you know, do this, I'm just trying to get to know you. So, you know, allow me to do that, then I can help you the most. And she says a few things, and I said, look, I'm here to help you. If you want my help, you know how I know I'm very confident in what I'm doing. I know it gets people results. I give you the tools. It is up to you then to how you're going to work on the tools. And that's okay if you don't want to do X, W, and Z. We will have to align or realign your expectations with your goals. That's all. I'm here for what you want. So next thing I want you to do is take the rest of the day and think about what you expect me to help you with. I'll be there for you. Just let me know and communicate, and you can count on me. I mean, literally, right? We have to get real with the people who doesn't want to change. Oh, I've always been done this, that. And I said, look, we hire coaches for multiple reasons. I recently paid thousands of dollars to get a coach to get me accountable. And so what is it? On a health perspective, is accountability, motivation, guidance, knowledge, you know, outside perspective, you know, give you things and tools to help you get there and, you know, and help you walk with you, be your partner. That's why you sign up when you join my team. So now it's up to you to realize what you're going to do with it, because maybe if that's not what it is for you, that's okay. I can adapt. Let's just readjust to your goals and expectations of your weight loss. You know? That's it. It is, so she did, you know. She took a day and she signed up. She finally said, yeah, okay, let's see how it goes. She still didn't answer my question, and I'm backing off. I'm going to see her.
Let her do that. Let her answer you in the session.
Whatever she shows up, right?
Right. Let her answer you in the session. She didn't write it down.
Exactly.
Let her answer it in the session. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm done. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm here. I'm listening. I'll be here for what you want me to be. And maybe that's kind of thing that, you know, people need more of their space. But I told her very directly, and I said, for whatever reason you hire anybody to help you, nothing is going to change in your life unless you get out of your comfort zone. Nothing.
Yeah.
I'm here to push you outside of your comfort zone. Otherwise, there is no reason to pay for my services.
Right.
Just like you spend all this time, because I gave her, you know, I gave her so many tools in that two-hour session. And she says, she spent it because she lacks a lot of energy. I mean, very poor energy, right? And I'm asking her to do a couple of forms, for God's sake. I mean, Really, I mean, online forms answering things that will help you to stick with her own things. This is not lengthy stuff, okay? And she's like, oh, I spent all this time doing this research, that research, that research. And then I had to do this form, and I said, you know, cool. Did you realize that I gave you all that information? And you decided to spend the time to go, limited energy that you have, to use the energy to do all this stuff while it was handed to you. I'm not saying that you have to trust me 100%. No, no, no. But what I'm saying is people can get amazing results by doing those things. And then you, when you have more energy, then you can do more research. But you got to evaluate, if you have this much energy, how am I going to use?
Well, it's like if they have this much money, how am I going to use it? I have this much energy. How am I going to use it? What's to my highest and best good?
Right. Anyway, yeah. This real stuff, this real conversation doesn't happen. At the same time, as a coach, we kind of have to let it go and, you know, and give them the space that they need, I guess, and be there for, look, I'll be the coach that you want me to be, but we have to reassess, to make sure that they understand the consequences of, here's what you sign up for, here's what I can deliver in general if you do the work. If you choose not to do the work, then step away and reassess, you know?
Yeah, no,
I think we
danger.
Must do this.
Right. There's the people who say, you know, I want the result, and kind of an interesting one on somebody that we're working with in one of our programs, and she's working with one of our coaches, and she's had, you know, binge eating and emotional eating for her whole life. And she's been off and on, you know, okay, gluten and dairy and all this thing, but she's wanting to know, why am I not getting better? Like, well, she is better, but why am I not, like, why have I been spending, you know, thousands of dollars every year with all kinds of doctors and I'm not getting better? And it's like every 3 weeks, she's binging on sugar, dairy, and gluten. Every 3 weeks, like, she, and sometimes more. So she wrote today and said, well, for the first time ever, I went 3 whole weeks without sugar, dairy, alcohol, or gluten, and also caffeine. And we're like, great. But then she blew it because she went to a party, a birthday party, and they brought her a birthday cake. So she ate it. But she thinks there's the people who get on, well, I only eat it occasionally, you know, and they're not willing to take it to the next level. And those are, you really have to work on the emotional pieces and the addiction. You know?
Right.
So thank
right,
you
right.
for sharing all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
All right. So Brenda. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm getting over a cold, so excuse my voice.
All right.
So, my question has to do with insulin resistance and the whole ketogenic craze, which I jumped into. And my blood sugar numbers were not getting better. So I just listened to Mastering Diabetes, which I thought was excellent with all the plant-powered physicians on there, which reignited my whole interest in that. And the reason I felt like I couldn't go down that rabbit hole was because of SIBO and digestive issues with the legumes and things like that. But I have been transitioning and my microbiome's getting used to it. I'm happy to say, but my question is, I realize there's a transition period for creating that insulin sensitivity and getting the fat out of my liver and muscle cells. But what can you say to that transition period where someone feels like they're hungry all the time? Like I can't go my typical 4 to 6 hours now because I'm not having the high fat. And so I'm just eating because I have to eat. But I'm pooping like a champ because of all the fiber, which is amazing. Because of Hashimoto's, which I also have, I had that slow motility issue too, which probably led to the SIBO. So my question is how to help someone like me transition who feels like they're hungry all the time, stay satiated, but they also have that very low SOS salt, sugar, oil. And so I've really realized how addicted I had become to not sugar, but salt and oil.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious.
Yeah, so all that. First of all, no salt, sugar, oil. You know, no oil doesn't mean you have to have a low-fat diet. And here's, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. In fact, I'm going to be doing a webinar. It hasn't been announced. It'll be announced tomorrow because of all these questions that keep coming up about everybody's listening to this summit and that summit and this doctor and that doctor. I'm doing a talk on Tuesday called The Hazards of Paleo, Keto, and Plant-Based Diets. And it's all about, like, taking a one-size-fits-all approach. So if you're starving between meals, you probably need more fat. Mm-hmm. Fat is not the evil. Whole food fats. I'm talking avocado. I'm talking coconut. I'm talking olives. I'm talking silk nuts and seeds. I'm talking whole food fats. Oil is processed food. Oil, you know, sometimes I use therapeutically a little coconut oil for or MCT oil for a therapeutic purpose. I'll use a little culinarily, just a pinch, just to give something a mouthfeel. It's probably not the best. I try to stay away from oil completely, or I'm very, 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 very low oil. But oil and fat are two different things. Whole food plant fats are phenomenally healthy. It's finding the ones that work for you. So now you're trying this plant-based, and you're starving between meals. Now, what if you added some olives or coconut or avocado or some of those things? There are doctors out there who make out that those foods are evil, and they're not.
No, so let me be more specific. It's what you're saying, anything processed. So I've taken out the olive oil, which I thought was super healthy, and the coconut oil. But can I still have then coconut butter and coconut milk?
Coconut butter for sure. Coconut milk depends if you're making it or you're buying it and it does have additives and stuff. But, yeah, coconut butter, coconut milk, sure. They're real food, as long as it's a whole food that hasn't been fractionated and processed. Right? And you eat to the point that your body can tolerate. Now, some people without liver or gallbladder, it's small amounts of those things. But if I were to eat legumes and grains as a meal, I would be craving between meals as well, because it stimulates more insulin production. And there's a lot of there's a lot of different opinions, let's just say, out there. Fat is evil and it clogs the insulin receptors. Now, I don't believe that people should be eating high carb and high fat foods together, because they don't process well together. Right. So for me, my meals, I'm 100% plant-based. I've been 100% plant-based for 35 years, 33 years, something like that. Okay. I don't eat legumes or grains either. So people say, well, what do you eat? I eat vegetables and I eat whole food plant-based fats. I eat the amount of the fat that I need to keep me satiated. And it works, but you have to find your groove, right? If I eat grains, or if I eat too much fruit, or if I eat processed anything, oils, I don't feel as well. I feel sluggish. So you have to find what works for you, not what works for Dr. Joe, who said it on a summit. You see what I'm saying? There's no one size.
And finding it, is still just minding the blood sugar, doing the strips like you teach.
And then how do you feel? What's your energy level? Yeah. If you look at my glucose chart, it's all there, right? There's all the symptom problems you can check. You write your meal, you go, and you look back and you go, wow, every time I ate that particular thing in a meal, I felt sluggish, or I had a headache, or I, you know, had gas or bloating. And you find the perfect diet. You find the Brenda diet. I don't want you to follow the sweet spot diet. I don't want you to follow the zone diet. I don't want you to follow the keto diet. I want you to follow the Brenda diet. And you get to choose and you get to do it. And the way you do it is you track. I wrote, for weeks, I have like a stack of 25 papers. I did it by hand. Now I would do it online. But of all the stuff, and I had the columns, what's my blood sugar? How do I feel? What's my energy? What's my stress level? And I did it religiously. And you have that chart, and do it for yourself, you know, before you start to. You may modify it. You may take some columns out. You think it's too complicated. but I monitor it. Now I'm monitoring Keith's home. And as we're going to talk about on Tuesday, just as a little preview, is Keith, you don't have to eat lard and oil and all that other crap that people are telling you to eat on a ketogenic diet to get in ketosis. You just have to control the amount you eat, and you have to control the amount of carbohydrate. And I've been monitoring, and as my, I've been fasting for the last 5 days, and I'm going to eat in about 3 hours. Yay. I'm excited. Yay. And what am I going to eat? Some vegetables and fat, right? I'm going to eat an avocado, or I'm going to eat some olives. I'll decide at the time what I'm going to eat with some kind of vegetables. Last time I did a fast, I broke it with sauerkraut and avocado, like avocado smashed onto the sauerkraut with some lemon. It was delightful. But the point is that I've been monitoring, and I'm monitoring what it takes to be in ketosis and not, and the fact that when the sugars go down, the ketones go up. Ideally, if it doesn't, then there's some metabolic disorder that needs to be looked at. It doesn't work as quite as well in my husband, who takes more time to get in that state. So there's ways to adjust it, and the ways are to vary your diet. Like maybe you have some light days and heavy days. But if you're feeling super hungry between meals, something in that meal is maybe raising your blood sugar or raising your insulin and then dropping your blood sugar. So I would be monitoring, use your meter regularly on this new diet and see how it's working for you. That's the one thing these guys aren't teaching. They're not teaching to monitor.
Right. And when I have my fasting insulin done, it's always crazy, like 14. Now, is that a beta cell?
You're making too much insulin. You're and it's going to cause you. That's probably why you're having these ridiculous lows in between meals. You're making too much insulin, and then it's dropping your sugar too much.
But this was on a paleo diet, so I don't know how it looks now on the plant-based.
Yeah, I would check it. If you were on a paleo diet for a while and it was up like that, you're overproducing. There's some reason you're overproducing, and it could be some of the other factors too, right? Stress, sleep, or fitness, right? And in finding it, it's like playing with those factors, playing with all those basic factors until you get it right. And, you know, there may be some metabolic distress regulation. Maybe it's your liver, right? It's not storing the glucose as glycogen, so your body's, I don't know. There's a number of reasons it could be.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't just see peptide, because your pancreas is obviously working real well.
But it's dangerous to have that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not good.
It should be 3-5 at the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's bad. Yeah, because all the things we talk about with the high insulin, what that causes. Yeah. Yeah. Exercise and do more bursting. And find that level of exercise you need.
So if I'm having a little bit of olive oil, is that going to kind of thwart my efforts to create this insulin sensitivity in my cells, or just?
Depends on what you mean by a little. If you put a splash, like a teaspoon or two of olive oil across a day, I doubt it.
Okay.
It's not poison.
Yeah.
Much safer than glyphosate on, you know, a grain or whatever. Yeah. It's not poison. Right. And have you done the 30-day metabolic reset? Were you real strict for 30 days?
I need to go back and follow it.
Yeah. Have you done any fasting? Because fasting can reset things.
Water?
Yeah.
Or?
Water.
I have a really hard time with sleep if I do that. I get really agitated and like revved up, and I can't relax. I don't feel grounded.
Then I would look at your adrenals.
Yeah.
Like there's a cortisol issue there too.
I know they're tanked. Every time I've done a test, they're like stage 3.
All right. You need to address it. And you're probably shooting it out and then dropping it down. So I would address your adrenals.
Mm-hmm.
And let go of some of the stress over the numbers. Just look at your numbers with wonder and curiosity.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that weird? right? And if you can't do that, then stop taking the numbers for a while and address those adrenals and just, you know, eat really what feels right. But loading up on grains and legumes, not probably not the best idea in the world. Vegetables.
Not for anybody, even if they can handle it.
Well, no, see, here's the thing. Most of the diets, most plant-based diets don't focus on vegetables. It's like your plate is full of legumes and grains, and you've got this little blob of vegetables.
Right.
It's finding what works for you. That kind of diet doesn't work for me. I tried it. Doesn't work for me.
Uh-huh.
What works for me is a huge plate of vegetables with some whole food plant-based fat.
Mm-hmm.
And give
yeah,
it a try.
I feel amazing when I have that.
Then eat it, darling. That's what your body's saying it needs.
Super, super grounding. I love whole olives and coconut and
now you know what to do. Don't worry about it being too high in fat. It's whole food and you're eating it with tons of vegetables.
Yes.
Go for it. Try it. See how it goes. All right?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Michelle. Oops, you might be muted. You might have muted your phone. She was there. I'm going to see if there's anything in the chat while we wait. Anything in the question and answer? No. Anything in the chat we need to? Looks like a nice conversation. Oh yeah, Dr. Walls did she did a great call. She wants to do more. I got to get in touch with her again. Okay, how do I share? What do you think of the biome testing? You know, I haven't done enough of it to know. I've seen the reports. They were a little kind of weird results, so I really don't know yet. My opinion's still out on those, on the biome tests. Lynn?
Yes. I had wanted to come on because I know this is our last call just for IRSPT, and with listening to everything people are sharing, point out a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One is the importance of getting your certification.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people go through and they go through the courses. They may or may not do the test. But let's say they go through and do the test, but go the extra mile. Find somebody, whether it's a friend, family member, it does not have to be a paying client. And do those case studies. Get the audio. Use your phone. However it works. If you need help with that, let us know. But get that certification because that's really going to help you. It will just help you to feel, you know, when you the way people look at you, it's like, oh, she's certified. It will help you to feel better about yourself. It doesn't change what you've learned, but it goes to that mindset. So that's the first thing I really, really want to encourage people to do is to get your certification. If you need any help.
Tag on that. You're totally right. And what it does is it gives you the, well, somebody else verified that I know my stuff, right? This person who knows certified that I know my stuff, so I must know my stuff. It just helps with that, your own mindset. You know, certifications, you know, I give certifications, but in reality, unless it's an accredited college with an accredited degree program and a, you know, a medical type thing, it doesn't hold water in a lot of situations. It doesn't mean anything, but it means something to the consumer because they see, oh, she's got extra training in this. She's certified in this. So it does make a difference in your psychology, but also your client's psychology. Does it hold up in court? No. But it's an awesome thing to have. I've got a number of certifications that I don't know what they mean, but they feel good to me.
Right. And our certification isn't one where you merely sign up for it and you get your certification. That's why we require those case studies. And so that
and
really allows you and the test. So it helps you to feel really good about this certification, because you know you put some real sweat and effort into it.
Yeah.
The other piece I wanted to bring up too, and again, this speaks to our part in educating people. You have access to a PowerPoint presentation that Dr. Rita Marie did. It is editable. So you can go in there and put your name in, adjust it however, use it. Go out there. It will help you to build your business if that's what you want. If it isn't, it still helps you to get that information out there and be a part of our team of getting this information out there.
Yep.
So it's under the education part. There's lots of done-for-you materials if you need it throughout the course. But we're so happy to see you here to get this information out there to really educate people, because that's how the change is going to be made.
That's right. And that's how our children are going to be protected when this change is just more and more. And I save it. I've been doing this for, you know, when I started working on my own self, it was in the 80s, like the early 80s. And it's over 30 years, 35 years. And I've seen so many changes since then. So many changes since then. It's getting there. The first IFM meeting that I ever went to is like, I don't know, back in, who knows, 20 years ago. And there were maybe 50 to 100 of us in the room. I went to one a couple of years ago, and there's like 900 to 1,000 in the room. Big, big difference. It's changing. It is. It's not as fast as I want it to, but it is changing. And we're all part of that. And I just had a thought as Lynn was saying that about the presentation. Here's a thought for those of you who need credibility with your family members. You can even do the presentation, do it on a slide share program, do it without an audience, and then load it up to YouTube. And then say, you don't even have to make it public if you don't want to. Then send the link, make it unlisted, send the link to your family members and say, hey, I'm so excited, look what I'm doing. And, you know, it's almost like you get this credibility when you have stuff on the web.
Yeah.
So it's just a thought.
Oh, that's great. I know for myself, my mother actually is telling her friends that they should listen to me. And it's because she sees me doing this. There is hope.
Yeah, totally. It's great. Thank you. All right. Well, if there's no more questions, we'll just...
There is some on the chat. How can you support people who are not able to digest fat?
Yeah.
Tried lipase and other enzymes, now using lecithin.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things. It's, first of all, finding out why. If they have no gallbladder, that's going to be different than if they have a gallbladder. So generally, it's sluggishness on the part of their bile creation. And oftentimes, the liver gets sluggish and doesn't produce enough bile when it's just overly toxic. It's just not functioning right because it's toxic. It's being stressed. There's a lot of toxins. So I would do a general overall cleanse type of thing. We have one in our CMDS program as part, well, actually CMDS has access to our grand program, which is our consumer version. And there's a liver gallbladder, a mini liver gallbladder kind of an approach. But there's more extensive ones. I know that Isabel, just took over Jane's liver gallbladder flush. It's a week long program with a week prep. Those are intense. Some of the light things, you know, it's all about like supporting the liver. You can support the liver with various herbs that help move the bile. They're called cholagogue herbs. And in that CMDS, we have a list of, I don't know, like 10 or 20 or 30 maybe cholagogue herbs. You can start working with some of those to try to move the liver and the gallbladder. In the meantime, you give them lipase because they're going to need extra, but they really do need the bile. They need the emulsification of the fats before the lipase can really work. And sometimes they need bile acids. And for those who are, you know, vegan for ethical reasons, may not want to do bile acids because they are animal-based. I don't know of any bile acids or synthetic bile acids that are not animal-based, but bile acids just going really, really slowly. Sometimes it's stomach acid issues. And sometimes it's a stress issue, right? They're stressing out and things are not moving along in their system. And there might be a hormonal thing where the food is not triggering the release of polycystic kinin, which is in, again, we go through that in detail in the digestion CMDS. But it's really a matter of finding out why and supporting the body with these foods and nutrients and taking the load off the liver. So doing periodic cleanses, whether it be fasting or juice fasting or powdered, you know, medical food mixes with the extra herbs and support for the liver would be really good. And just as a shameless plug, for those of you who have just been in IRSPT for now, and, you know, as you finish up, you might consider the CMDS, Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System, and I think you just go to digestivemastery.com. You can learn more about it because that could be your next step. Some of you might consider moving into the full NEPT program, and for those of you who are just finishing up, you'll actually get full credit of what you paid towards IRSPT to get into NEPT, which is our two-year certification where we go into all the lab testing and all the different hormones, and it's pretty intensive, amazing program. So if you have any issues or questions and want to know more, you can go to neptapply.com and have a conversation with Lynn, and she'll take it through. And if that's a good program for you, yes. If not, she'll recommend the Digestive Mastery. Or we have she'll talk to you about it. I don't want to get into all that detail. But Julie raised her hand.
And also going along with the prior person, they said they have done liver gallbladder cleanses and they have a COMT SNP.
Oh, they have a COMT SNP. Well, COMT SNP is generally not associated with liver gallbladder per se, but it is in the sense it's associated with higher levels of anxiety. And higher levels of anxiety generally lead to higher levels of cortisol. Higher levels of cortisol shut down the digestive tract. They shut down the gallbladder and bile. So I would look at, I don't know what gallbladder and liver flushes are, but there's more than one way to skin a cat, as the saying goes. And some people say, well, I did a flush and it didn't matter. Well, yeah, that the flush is different than getting in and using some of these herbs to support. I mean, a real strong one is celandine. That might be a little too strong for a lot of folks, but there's a lot of good cholagogue herbs. And again, we list them all for you in the Digestive Mastery program. Like, I don't have, you know, all of them memorized. Anything else from there? Well, I want to get to Julie, who's had her hand up for a little bit. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Cool.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, so, welcome from Oregon. You're from Eugene, eh? It's beautiful up there.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's beautiful today. So thank you for your amazing program. I just love it. And I just met Jenny Nolan, and we just are so excited to maybe possibly work together. We're so excited.
How fun.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yes, she is.
Yeah,
she's
amazing. Yeah, and I'm just a beginner in your program, so, and I have other strengths than she does, so we think we might be a good fit. So it's really exciting.
Oh, I love it. I love it when we create this community that gets to know each other, and then, you know, amazing things happen. That happened with Cassandra and Tony, who met at Shine, and they did start doing stuff together, and Karen and so many people who started doing stuff together. It's so exciting.
Oh, great. Nice. Oh, I'm glad other people have had success with that. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'd love to get their contacts and find out how they did. That would be really
Go look on, go on the INE group and tag Cassandra or Tony or Karen. And okay. Karen Osborne, Cassandra Herbert, or Tony St. Clair. I think they're the only Tony and Cassandra on there. Karen, maybe a bunch of them, but Karen Osborne. But they've done a lot of joint ventures with folks in the program. Karen, probably others have too. I'm just not off the top of my head remembering.
Okay, Cassandra who?
Cassandra. If you just type Cassandra when you go into the INE group, she's the only one that'll show up.
Okay.
And Antoinette. It would be how you would do Tony, and she's the only Antoinette that would show up.
Okay, I know who she is. Antoinette. Yeah. Okay, so I have a question. Sure. I've been doing free classes once a month, and Well, first of all, I'm the health coach for our business, which is really fun. And so everyone in our business gets to come to the free talks. And then I invite people from the general public also, because I also have clients that are from the general public. And I haven't gotten very many clients from that, from doing that. And in fact, several people told me, gosh, that slideshow on digestion is awesome. I healed all my problems.
So you're doing what all of us do. You're giving too much and not leaving them hanging and wanting for more. There's an art to it.
Yeah.
And in fact, in our NEPT program, we're bringing in a special speaker in a couple of weeks that's going to teach a little bit about that art of giving a presentation and getting clients from it. But you're not in that main program. So, we may do a Facebook Live on the general show, but it's really important to know how to do that. And you don't want to give too much. Don't give too much. I probably err on the side of too much and I try to hold it back a little bit. And then you need to flow smoothly into why they need what you're offering, right? So if you leave these open gaps of, these open circles of why they need you. But if you give them and you lay it out and they go, I got enough here. Why would I sign up for this or anything more? Right?
Right. Okay. I'll look out for that program if it's available. Thank you.
All right. Well, the program that I'm talking about is not going to be available except in the NEPT program because we bring people in special for that.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Lynn, did you have your hand up again? Yeah.
There's one more question here from Kim. Have you heard of using UltraClear by Metagenics for cleaning the liver to lower cholesterol?
Yeah, I used to use it all the time, and I would not use UltraClear. I would use UltraClear Plus. It has some liver support and gallbladder support. It's just a matter of it works for some people. It doesn't work for others. So it's not specifically liver power, but it's made for detox. And detox is so important because, there's multiple functions of the liver, right? Storing vitamins, storing glycogen. There's detoxing chemicals and waste products. There's producing bile. And the liver is like standing there juggling. Dee, 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 dee. If one of those balls gets way heavier than the rest, something's going to drop, right? So you're going to work on that heavier ball while the others drop. And I that's how I see it with the digestion. I mean, with the fat digestion, right? Yeah. Good question. Anybody else? It's time. It's 29. So I'm going to open your lines up. And I'm going to say goodbye and have you all say goodbye to each other. And anything you want to say to each other, just go out and shout it out. 1, 2, 3. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. Appreciate the changes you're making in the world.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.